everybody has their own set of strengths and gifts, and we have to find and work with those.
Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds, featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team, here to lead conversations with educational leaders and experts. My hope is to share with you not only valuable insights and knowledge from leaders in education, but have fun while doing it and shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. Reading difficulty has an outsized effect on a student's ability to be successful in school and in life. In the past few years, more and more states are passing legislation around dyslexia, requiring schools and teachers to have the knowledge around dyslexia and to screen students early. Dyslexia is defined as a brain-based learning disability that specifically impairs a person's ability to read. Fortunately, research suggests that early identification and intervention for dyslexia is effective in preventing further difficulty for the student. In today's episode, I sat down with Kristen Besaw, Assistant Director of Interventions and 504 for Bryan Independent School District in Texas. We talked about misconceptions around dyslexia and how a multi-tiered system of supports can help meet the needs of students that are at risk for dyslexia. Kristen was kind enough to share how Bryan ISD is striving to intervene early and implement best practices to support students at risk for dyslexia. I learned a lot about dyslexia from our conversation, and I hope you do as well. Enjoy. Today on our podcast, we have Kristen Besaw from Bryan Independent School District in Texas. She is an Assistant Director of Interventions and 504s, but we're so glad to have you today. We're going to talk a little bit about MTSS and dyslexia, and we're just excited to have you to chat today. So why don't you just kind of maybe give us a brief introduction and a little background?
Okay. So I've been in education about 28 years. All of those years have been with Bryan Independent School District. I started out as a language arts teacher in the high school classroom and then moved on, used a lot of technology in the classroom with my students and became really fascinated with how technology can help our students be successful in their endeavors, particularly when they're struggling. And so I became a technology specialist and opened one of our high schools here in Bryan. From there, I continued to be fascinated with administration. I went back and got my master's degree in educational administration, and then kind of returned back to my first love of language arts and became the district's first secondary language arts coordinator. And then from there, reading interventions, dyslexia, those kind of fell into my purview. And so currently I am the assistant director of Section 504 and interventions, and that encompasses dyslexia, MTSS, RTI, summer school programming, and then of course, Section 504.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so for people who maybe don't understand what Section 504 means, what do you want to give kind of a brief explanation of what that is?
So Section 504 is a, it came out of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it's basically a protection that is provided in particular in this realm to students who are in school who may have a disability that requires one or more interventions or accommodations to help level the playing field and help them be successful in their behavior and their academics. So this could be a student who has attention deficit. It could be a student who has dyslexia, anxiety, any of those major life activities where a student might struggle, and we can provide provide those accommodations for them.
Maybe describe a little bit about your community, and even, you know, we talk a lot here on the podcast about MTSS and about how that's, how that looks at Bryan ISD.
Mm-hmm. So it's been a journey. My journey with, of course, first it was RTI. Now we've, you know, expanded that to say the multi-tier systems of support. When I first started in this position, we kind of had this paper dolls approach to RTI. It seemed like we had this framework and then we just would hang different pieces on it. And so that became very burdensome and also complicated for teachers and students, and even for our parents. We had separate spreadsheets that track student progress and information, and everybody had something different every campus. We also had meetings logged on this document or handwritten and placed in this file. We had checklists upon checklists and folders upon folders. And so when I took over RTI, and it's been several years now, my whole focus became let's have a framework that's organized and logical, where we house all of the students' information in one place. And that's when we moved over to the platform of using Branching Minds. And that's really transformed our practices, our collaborative approaches, and the way that we meet the needs of our students. And so I'm really thankful for that partnership that has allowed that to happen.
Well, and I think that what you talked about, how the framework and the sort of the processes was so burdensome. You know, I think that as a former educator, I often, you know, there are just things that we started implementing and it was so burdensome. And so it's like, when it's so complicated, it makes it hard to want to continue through the like initial setup and all that kind of stuff. And so there's always that sense of like, this should be easier. We just want to help kids. Like, we just want to make intervention. Like, it should be easier. And so it's always good to like have a system and have a way of going about it. And you're right, it is very collaborative. And so it's meant to be, you know, you want to take away those like burdens of it being non-collaborative, mm-hmm. And kind of open the door, because that's when the magic happens. Like, I don't know if you've sat in one of those meetings when like, you know, ideas from teachers or, you know, support staff, and have these, oh, like, have you tried this? And you're like, no, like, let me try, you know, and that's when I think this is like the magic sauce of this collaborative meetings. And so you have done a lot of work around dyslexia in your district. Can you kind of like maybe describe sort of just what has been some important factors in that work?
I think probably the biggest factor in serving students with dyslexia is making sure that some of those myths are busted about dyslexic students, as well as ensuring that everybody understands what dyslexia is. And also not only dyslexia, but the related disorders such as dysgraphia, which is the handwriting piece of dyslexia. And so that piece for me, both of those pieces really is probably the greatest challenge in our district.
Mm-hmm. So maybe describe like what dyslexia, let's just define it. What is dyslexia for those that may not know?
Yeah. So typically students with dyslexia, they have unexpected difficulties in reading. In other words, they may have adequate intelligence. They can do math and science. And although they don't have to, but usually that is something that we see. And so they're very bright, inquisitive children who at some point they have an unexpected difficulty learning how to read. And so that difficulty may come in reading words in isolation or decoding words that are unfamiliar. A lot of times we see that dyslexic learners have a very slow, inaccurate, or even labored reading process. And then, of course, probably the one that dyslexia is most known for, and that's the spelling difficulties. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a student who has these difficulties, you're going to see those difficulties manifest themselves in other areas. They're going to have trouble because their reading is so slow and labored. That fluency piece that's so important to understanding what you're reading, that fluency slows way down as students are processing, trying to decode those words. They're not able to hold on to the words' meanings and then the meaning, the comprehension of what's being read in the passage. And dyslexia, it exists many times on a continuum. Sometimes students have difficulty with all of those pieces. Sometimes it's just a few. But that's dyslexia in a nutshell.
I didn't ever think of it as a continuum. That's kind of a new information for me. You know, as a language arts teacher, of course, I like knew somewhat about what dyslexia was, but I feel like the understanding as a continuum is interesting.
Just like you think about every child is different. You and I can line up to run a race. And I may have difficulty with my breathing, and you may have difficulty with how fast your legs can keep pace. It's just going to depend on that student. So yeah. We have a lot of things that we look for when they're younger. We know that they oftentimes have trouble learning their letters and then the sounds that are associated with those letters. They have difficulty manipulating words and pulling out the beginning or ending sounds of words, or really acknowledging that there's pieces to words when they read. And so, you know, they may also have trouble with that rapid recall. If you put a color in front of them, it takes them a little bit to recognize, okay, yes, that's the color blue or yellow or green. So there's all sorts of difficulties that can be associated with dyslexia, and not everyone is going to have the same thing to the same degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm. Does that make it more difficult then to diagnose dyslexia because it looks different?
It can. Usually what it affects when you're assessing students is determining what areas they may need more repetition in, or what areas they're going to struggle more. And so they may need a more intensive focus on that particular part. But yes, I mean, no student learns the same, and that's going to be the same with your dyslexic students as well.
So you kind of mentioned this earlier, but there are some like kind of common misconceptions around dyslexia. So for you, what would you say are those myths or misconceptions around dyslexia?
Well, I think the first thing is that when a child is very young and they're learning how to write their letters, or they're learning their letters, a lot of times you'll see them make reversals. The B's and the D's, like, those are sometimes very hard for students to kind of get straight in their mind. And so sometimes a parent will say, oh my goodness, my child has dyslexia because they're reversing those letters. That's actually just a normal developmental part of learning as you're growing. Once you've actually had handwriting instruction, once you've actually used some techniques to try to fix those reversals, if they still persist, then that might be a time when you might want to consider dyslexia testing. But all students, I think about my own students, other students that I know, that reversal piece is pretty universal, especially when a student's teaching themselves how to write, like maybe at home when they're three or four and they're coloring and scribbling. But again, we should see that disappear once they have that adequate instruction. Mm-hmm. And then probably the other myth that I think persists is that dyslexic students are not going to be able to achieve academically. Mm-hmm. And there could be nothing further from the truth. You maybe have seen some of the same YouTubes or TikToks or any of those social media pieces out there about the brilliant people who are dyslexic, it is absolutely possible to achieve not only academically, but creatively when you're a dyslexic student. We just have to remember that everybody has their own set of strengths and gifts, and we have to find and work with those. And it could be that reading is not going to be that particular dyslexic student's gift, but maybe mathematics is, or painting or music or some area like that. So we just have to thoughtfully intervene with those students with dyslexia and then help them overcome those challenges. And that might look like that student needs accommodations throughout their academic career. They may need a text to speech or speech to text just to help them with that productivity in their reading and writing.
Do you find that like that conversation maybe with parents when you sort of initially sort of diagnose or kind of identify a student that has dyslexia, you know, is that conversation like a fear that you've had to calm from with parents?
I don't know if it's necessarily a fear, because in the moment, I think sometimes parents aren't necessarily thinking of the reality and the ongoing challenges. I think it's more so of an emotional support, if you will, making sure that parents are equipped with that knowledge of, let's find the student's strengths, let's find the areas where they shine so that we can continue to build their self-esteem, because not being able to read in a classroom of readers can be very demoralizing for a student. And so when you have an answer like dyslexia, I think that provides relief to families. Okay, now we know this is what it is. But sometimes that damage has been done, so to speak. And so I feel like when we're looking at MTSS and the whole child, that's also a piece that has to be addressed, that building of confidence and self-esteem that's not related to reading, because we're going to take care of their reading with the dyslexia intervention, but it's the other pieces of the child that we have to make sure that we're also taking care of.
Well, and that's how then I think MTSS really addresses dyslexia, because it's wrapping around the whole child and not just, it's not just this one piece, this one intervention, but it's about supporting the student as a whole. And I imagine, I think what you said when you're like a relief, I imagine that if there's parents and a student is struggling, that there is this sense of like, oh, there's an answer, because like without an answer, there's not a direction. And there's a lot of uncertainty and unknown of like, what do I do to help my student? So I imagine that, that is really true.
Yes, it can be.
Yes. I also liked what you said about that idea of building up their strengths, and that identifying that, you know, not all students are gonna, well, I always had to sort of have this grip to take this reality in of like, as an English teacher, not all students are going to fall in love with reading and be love it and love reading time and all that kind of stuff. And so I always had to have that measure of reality of like, I want to help you become as best reader as you can and want to be, in order for you to do the things that you want to do. And so that is that piece of like, every child has strengths in lots of different areas, and it's important that they know those things are strengths, like, you know, yeah.
Well, and, you know, you talk about being a language arts teacher. And so this can be something that is difficult sometimes in the classroom for a dyslexic learner. We want them to have access to great literary works like To Kill a Mockingbird, for example. It's just that those students may need to listen to the audio version of the book. They're still going to be exposed to all the themes and motifs and all of the pieces that make that piece of literature great, the vocabulary. And that's what's important. Maybe not necessarily that they read every single word, but they are exposed to that piece of literature and they know it through an audiobook.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's kind of the difference between teaching reading and teaching literature, because, you know, there was that element balancing that is, especially as a middle school teacher, I kind of had to balance that, like teaching the functions of reading, but then also teaching, you know, when you talk about theme and like ideas, I encountered that with my English language learners and students that struggled in other areas. Using the audiobook was key because I wanted them to really understand the text, making that accessible to them so that they could do the other activities that were associated with it. And so I think that was important to like understand, like I'm not teaching necessarily the function of reading in this lesson or this unit, but teaching them the sort of the process of digging into a piece of literature and story and things like that. So, exactly. But that is a difficult thing because we encounter that conversation a lot in our department of like, well, is an audiobook really, you know, and I think that's the conversation a lot of people have is like, listening to audiobooks isn't really reading, you know? And I'm like, no, it is. Cause you're still interacting with the piece of literature, just in a different modality. So,
correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we talked a lot about different parts of dyslexia. I'm curious, so we talk about interventions. So what kind of effective interventions and strategies do you go about to help students with dyslexia to improve their reading and writing?
So in our district, we know we basically follow the Texas Dyslexia Handbook. And we're due, there's been new legislation passed, we'll be due for another handbook update, I'm sure very soon. But what we know is that dyslexic students, they benefit from phonological awareness activities, segmenting activities, associating letters and sounds, syllabication, orthography, which is the teaching of the spelling, and morphology, the pieces of the words. So we know that all of those things go into reading. And so an effective reading program not only addresses all of those areas, but it's also multisensory. So those students are learning through touch, through motion, things that will help cement that learning in their brain. So in our district, we use an Orton-Gillingham method. The name of the program is Reading by Design, and it has been developed and is distributed by our Education Service Center here in the Houston area. So that is what we use in order to intervene with those students, especially at the elementary, early intermediate age.
Mm-hmm. It's probably better to like follow a program sort of in design rather than kind of like, you know, piece by piece.
Correct. The program has to be systematic. It's the program we use. I don't want to say regimented, but it is. It follows kind of the same pattern each day where you're working through each of those pieces that students have difficulty with. And so you're absolutely right that it's got to be taught explicitly and it has to be taught, to automaticity.
Yeah. Well, and I think especially with students that are struggling, that routine, that structure is very key. From what I know about brain science, which yes. is not yes. a lot, but some, but I think that's really a key part of that, like, you know, making those connections in the brain of the different things that they need to learn. So I kind of laugh when I say brain science, because I'm like, I don't want to ever claim that I know I'm, you know, that extensive knowledge, but from what I know that's really key.
You know, also many of our students who are dyslexic struggle with attention issues to varying degrees. And so having a program that is not only predictable, but also fast moving with the changing of activities frequently to hit all of those different areas of struggle helps those students to stay on track, to stay focused and engaged. And of course, it's in a small group setting. Usually 3 to 4 students are right there at the table with the teacher so that all of those pieces to help them stay on track can be addressed.
You talked a little bit about this earlier, but As far as like MTSS and having interventions for dyslexia, how does that all meld together?
So usually for a student who is not identified with dyslexia, so we screen students in both kindergarten and first grade for those characteristics of dyslexia to see if they pop, I guess for lack of a better term, on that screener, that they are someone who is struggling. And depending on the interventions that have been tried with the student, that student's history, I mean, there's all sorts of things that take place during those MTSS meetings in order to help those students. But sometimes it could just be a lack of exposure. And so during that intervention period, we may work with that student, as I mentioned, on their letter sound combinations and putting different pieces into place to help them close that gap. And if the student still continues to struggle, that's when we may look at dyslexia and not waiting. I mean, we want mm-hmm. our students to be identified as early as possible, but sometimes we want to make sure that they've also been exposed to that knowledge before we jump off into a disability.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the beauty of MTSS, right? Like where you do that kind of early prevention so that you can identify the students that really need that are going to need that long-term help, but also like, you know, we don't over-identify, because I think that is, that's such a danger, I think, in education of like students that are struggling or like, oh, we'll just, put them in this route. And so I think MTSS really prevents that and really like, maybe there's a small gap that needs to be filled early on, and then they're great. You know, they don't need that further intervention, but then it also helps kind of create the avenue for those that maybe will need more. And I think it frees up, to me, I think it's the best use of resources, because then it frees up those more intensive supports and continued help to really be able to be accessible for those students.
Yes. So, correct.
Yeah. So I always like to ask this question, because I think that, you know, most educators, when they're doing this work, there's stories that come to mind. There's a reason that we keep doing the work, because it is hard work. Can you think of just an experience with a student that really demonstrates the power of MTSS or just early intervention, like we've talked about?
So I think every day there are all kinds of stories of intervention heroes in our district, and I'm sure across the nation. I, in particular this year, as I was thinking about while you were talking, a little girl whose parent is an educator, she was really struggling, and her mom said, I think she has dyslexia. I want to know, does she have dyslexia? And so, as you mentioned, you know, we kind of took that step back and really assessed that student where she was and saw that there were some gaps. And so we implemented an intervention to address those gaps right away. And within, I would say, just a few very quick weeks, that student was quickly coming up to grade level standard with her peers in those previous areas where she had been struggling. And so we did decide to continue with the intervention, to continue closing those gaps. And now at the end of the year, we use the MAP assessment. That student's MAP assessment, she is in like the 99th percentile in terms of growth and reading ability. And really, she just needed that intervention to help her close that gap and just kind of wait till all the pieces fell into place. And so for her, dyslexia, you know, was not the answer. So that's kind of my story. And I know that, that her parents are really proud of the work of the school and the interventionist and of course mm-hmm. their child.
Well, and I think that that's a great story to demonstrate of like when that targeted intervention is done well and how the power of that, like, and the need for that, because if that had never been occurred, you know, like if we just continued tier one, everyone gets this, you know, and never do that target, she would continue to struggle. And so it's like, just needed to fill the gaps and then, you know, to help her make the step that she needed to make. And I think that's a great testament to the work that the MTSS can do.
And I think too, and we just have to be careful that our students aren't languishing in interventions. Mm-hmm. So that progress monitoring is very important to make sure that that student is making the gains that we expect toward literacy improvement. Because if they're not, we don't want them to try RTI for a year. Like that should be for a very prescribed amount of time before we do something else.
Yeah. Oh no, that's so true. That I think that I like that your word that languishing in intervention. That's a great way to put it, because I think that I always think it's like, it's not supposed to be a long-term solution, right? It's supposed to be a short amount of time, a designated amount of time to see if it works and to see like if progress is made. And if it's not, then you have to go back and figure out what's next. So I think that that's a really important part. So in your community, I know it's, you do a lot of different things, but what is kind of a goal or something that you're like looking forward to working towards in this next year or next few years?
So some colleagues and I wrote, our state education agency gave districts the opportunity to apply for a dyslexia grant. And we worked very hard on that grant, and were awarded a $2.3 million dyslexia grant, which was huge for our district. The biggest part of that grant was tier one instruction and making sure that we have excellent foundational skills education happening for our students. And so that was one of the things that we purchased with that grant. And we're already seeing great dividends from that systematic foundational skills instruction that's really meant to curb those dyslexic tendencies in a student, so that number one, we don't have students who look dyslexic, but also that early intervention of that systematic phonics and foundational skills instruction is happening. So I'm really proud of that work. Because of that work, we're able to further hone in on those students who still continue to struggle after that instruction, so that we are specifically targeting those students who may have dyslexia. So that's kind of the dream and the goal that we've been living both this year and next year, is to really make sure that our tier one instruction is extremely robust in teaching those students, so that we don't see as many dyslexic learners in the future.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's so exciting. I think that anytime you can get that extra funding to do the really important work, I think is huge. And I love that you talked about tier one. I think having that strong tier one for students, and even just, I think in, especially just reading, I know that's such a, like a hot topic these days about the science of reading and all that, but I think that those are the, like, we know better and let's do better, get those kiddos to, to be strong readers and get the support that they need. So that's amazing. Yeah. Kristen, this is really great. I feel like I learned so much from you about dyslexia and just understanding it more, and just the power of, you know, having the system and the framework to support students that, struggle in this area. I wanted to kind of, wrap up, we always wrap up with kind of like a fun question. And so the thing I'm kind of asking these days is like, what's something fun for you in school as a kid, when you kind of think back to your school experience, what was something that always struck you as like really fun or that you looked forward to?
So I remember in the fifth grade that I was chosen to be on the safety patrol in school. And so I was very big stuff. I had a badge. I had the orange belt. And then, you know, later on, I went to a very small rural high school. There was only 55 in my graduating class. And so you had opportunities to be a part of FFA and ag. You could be on sports. You were in the math club. You were in National Honor Society. In a small town, in a small school, everybody does everything.
Yeah.
And so, so now as an educator, I realize starting with safety patrol and moving on into middle school and high school, where I was involved in all of these clubs and organizations and activities, I was living the best practice in being connected to my school community family. And so I think sometimes we have families and even students who get turned off with education. And so I feel so fortunate that I was a part of a community of involvement. And from dyslexia to RTI to summer school to all of the things that I'm involved in now, it's about making those connections and relationships to students. So that fun back then is something that I continue to keep in mind today. Now that I know the research and the science, you know, you talked about the science behind it. We know when students are involved and they feel a part of something that they can really soar and achieve. And so that's what I try to keep in mind each day.
Well, it's that sense of belonging and how powerful that is for students. And I think getting connected in a way, you know, I think about that all the time as a fellow, rural small town, graduate, you know, and being involved in all the things, like that was so important to my school experience. And I always think that I would hope for every kid to have that, in the sense that like feeling like they have somewhere to belong. So that's really great. I love that. And I'm sure that you carry that over in all of your work you do, and the people you connect with. So, thank you so much for chatting about dyslexia and MTSS and just your work. I just appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed being here and talking to you today.
Thanks for listening to School and Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to hear all our future episodes. As well, if you're enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcast and let us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn @branchingminds.